This is a Roundtable Rewind.
I was just pointing our on-air light. Looks like we've lost a bulb.
We're on.
It's on, and you barely get an A.
At least it works.
It's in here, Rockstar. It's in here. Yeah.
The door's having a tough time, too.
As long as we got one bulb working.
That's right.
That's always been my biggest fear in radio, Rockstar, because you know in the commercial breaks. And I still think someday.
We're going to get burned?
No. Oh. Well, I've always said that. I still think someday we need to have some way for our listeners to watch or listen inside the commercial breaks.
Mm.
But the audio, I think, can just be because we tell things that we can't tell on the air in the commercial breaks.
Well, we get a little too casual.
Some commercial breaks, sometimes those chairs are on fire.
Yes.
My fear is we would begin remembering that we're live during the commercial break. And at some point, we would forget we're live in the commercial breaks. Like, we would just get so casual. I mean, like, there are times we get so casual just being on air. I think we've all probably said things we regret.
Oh, yes, yes.
I mean, not awful things, but, like, you look back on it and you think, I probably shouldn't have said that.
Wish I had used his name.
Yeah, we got a little too casual on the air there. Just imagine us in commercial breaks, and we would be, what I'm saying is we'd be on guard to begin with.
Right.
And then we would slowly let the guard down and even forget at times that we're live.
So my fear has always been, and what's the joke around here, that in the commercial breaks, if we're telling a PG-13 or North story in the commercial break, who always looks at the on-air light?
Jim Dunaway.
Lance.
Lance does not.
It's because,
of Lance. I'm always looking at the on-air light. So I'm constantly glancing up. And my fear in all of television and radio, my 30-year history now, I've never had an on-air light.
Oh, gosh.
That did not work.
There it goes.
There's the knock on wood.
I mean, it's hanging for dear life.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The closest I've ever been right here.
Yeah, I think they're going to change a bulb. With the first rule of radio and TV really is every mic is a live mic. That is rule one, day one.
Yeah.
It's easy to ignore that rule.
Oh, absolutely.
It's easy. You get so comfortable in casual.
There's a mic in every room we go into.
And I know.
Now.
Every mic is a live mic.
And we know that our smart devices in the house
is
listening to us all the time. We've learned our phones are listening to us all the time. There's a guy who's now working at CNN that tells you there's a camera on all the time. I mean.
Did you see the introduction back into it?
Yes.
Was it that awkward? I never stopped to watch the video.
So uncomfortable.
I was thinking
about it. They had to address the.
Yeah. Right. It had to be a female anchor that had to introduce him, and they had to explain what he was doing.
Was there a trash on the table open that comes out of it?
Well, there's some language in there that she's afraid to describes it to a T, so I guess nobody can say you messed around the line.
So they have to dance around.
She didn't dance around it. She was like, "Hey, we hired him back, and this is why you were missing since October."
So let me explain what happened.
Yeah. And he said, no excuse. I just didn't know the camera was on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Feel better about that now. Yeah.
So now, not only is every mic's a live mic, you got to always assume every camera's a live camera.
You know, I know a lot of people, like we've got a coworker up here, and I've been in his office, and he has a little piece of cloth that he drapes over his computer camera. Actually, I've seen multiple coworkers do that.
A lot of people put a piece of tape over it.
Yeah. So then when I need it, I just unveil it with the clients. Like, hello, everyone.
Showtime.
Yeah.
Ta-da.
So I don't know. I don't know if that's recommended or what.
Yeah.
But.
Hey, Big Brother's watching, man. That's an old thing to say, but it seems that way. Anyway, our on-air light, we're down to one bulb. But I've got bulbs in my house. Do y'all have one that blows more often than others?
Yep.
My outside light by my middle door exiting the garage.
Okay.
I mean, it's
light. I leave it on all the time. That's the problem.
Well, me too. Yeah. But my life expectancy on that is almost weekly, it seems like. I mean, I'm sure it's longer than that, but it seems like it blows every week. And then I've got some I'm like, I don't know if I've ever replaced that light. And to me, the on-air light bulb is the longest-lasting bulb on the planet.
Yeah, this has had
it's
a good
the
run.
Eternal flame.
It is. Absolutely. Like the Bengals once sang about.
But is it true or not true? Is it urban legend or not that there is that – Thomas Edison's first bulb, am I right, or Thomas Edison?
I don't
Edison?
Know if this is his first bulb. There's a bulb at a fire department, I think, that's been going on for over 100 years. It's never gone out. And there's like a live feed of the bulb.
And it's like one of his original designs, right? Like
that I don't know.
Yeah, okay. I thought I'd heard that.
You might be right, but I don't remember.
Okay. Well, it could just be an Edison bulb. I mean, that's like a not a brand, but a design of bulb.
Oh, I know that now because every hipster in the world had it a decade ago.
Now we got one in our kitchen.
Yeah, so now everybody has them.
The Centennial Light that's been burning since 1901, according to the Wikipedia.
That's a good one.
Well, I would say, yeah. I mean, because I'm like you, I've had to replace my front porch lights no telling how many times. This has been on since 1901.
Now, chance that I brought it up on the air today, Jimmy Landmine, that thing goes out today.
Right now.
Today.
Oh,
we're
man.
In the dark. Centennial light is out.
Just a 30-watt bulb, man. They say it's dim now, though.
Is it?
It's going out. Rockstar's right. It's at a fire station. Yeah. I'll tell you, the ones that go out the most, like I've got two on my front porch. And the little fixture, it's a pain in the A to get the little thing off so you can change the bulb.
That's just theory of large numbers.
I know.
The ones that go out the most are going to be the hardest ones to get to.
It's these little screws. You can't see them.
Yeah.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah, like in my old trailer park days, I didn't have a lamp over. It's just a naked light bulb.
Danny,
those would burn forever.
Yeah, the lightning bugs in the jar died. We got to get a new one.
All right, fun show ahead. Paul Feinbaum with us at 7 o'clock. Andy Staples, so much going on in college football, joins us at 8. We got to start, though, with speaking of landmines. LT Brown and I were talking on Friday about just how automatic Arkansas was in betting odds to win the College World Series, number one overall seed. They are so confident in Fayetteville that in the camera well behind home plate, I don't know if you watched any of their games.
I saw it, yeah.
They actually have Omahogs.
Yeah, that's correct. It's one of their hashtags. They use it.
That's right. And it's a built-in logo for their baseball, Omahogs, and they have it back there behind the camera well. You can see it in every pitch, the shot. Problem is, you got to win two of three to get to Omaha to be the Omahogs, and the number one overall seed was not able to do that. NC State, who was part of the elimination of Alabama in that region down there, big underdogs, win that super regional, and Arkansas is out, and NC State's on their way to the College World Series.
Now, the Omahogs have been to Omaha a number of times. In fact, recently, 12, 15, 18, and 19. So they're a frequent competitor there in Omaha. Don't you think you should have to win a national championship first, though, before you can call yourself the Omahogs?
Yeah. Now, and they're only on a two-year consecutive run, right? 18, 19. They didn't have it last year.
Right.
So
this would have been three straight years. I think people would have given them three straight.
That's right. Yeah. So you're starting to build a reputation of always being there, but Omahogs is pretty confident, and they've never won a national championship is what I'm getting from you here. Right?
That is correct. They've been the runner-up a couple times, I believe.
Right.
Let me go back and look at that real quick. Runner-up, 79 in 2018, but they've never won it. Now, they've been a lot. 79, 85, 87, 89, 04, 09, 12, 15, 18, and 19. So, you know, they've been, what, 10 times to Omaha? I mean, the Omahogs, it's a great hashtag, and it works. But I'm just saying, you probably should win a national championship before you call yourself that.
Better over the weekend, though, was Tennessee eliminating LSU. And when you're Tennessee baseball, you can send out a picture of Peyton Manning screaming Omaha is an audible.
It's pretty good.
That is better than Omahogs when you're not going. So hats off to Tennessee, who is on its way to the College World Series in Omaha for the first time since 2005.
Their fifth appearance.
As they eliminate LSU. Yeah. Right. I mean, we all remember in our area here, it's been a struggle for years for Tennessee just to make Hoover.
Right. I mean, yeah, they have – this guy that's there, this Tony Vitello, has turned this program around. He's got them back in Omaha. And it seems to be pretty wide open now. I mean, I guess Vanderbilt was the second betting favorite behind Arkansas, so they ascend to the betting favorite, but it seems pretty wide open since NC State knocked Arkansas out.
Vandy is there, and with Rocker and Leiter pitching, and you know the rest of that pitching staff, but when you have two studs like that, I like Vandy's chances now too. So Vandy and Tennessee are in from the SEC. Arkansas's out. So put NC State in place of Arkansas. Stanford is there. Arizona knocked out Ole Miss last night in a beatdown. One bad bottom of the fourth inning, and that one was over with.
Well, I watched some of that Saturday night game, and I was fighting the sleep. And they had the one half inning, I think it was the bottom of the second, where the Arizona guy fouled off like 40 straight pitches. and that the Ole Miss starter started getting frustrated about it. Like, I thought he was just going to hit him at some point.
Exactly.
And then they go to the top half of the inning. So the Ole Miss pitcher gets through the second inning. He's thrown like 56 pitches through two innings, and he's got a no-hitter going. It's like nobody's hitting him, but he's having to throw all those pitches. Then they go to the top of the third, and Ole Miss puts up, I think, a 7 spot in the top of the third. The guy has to, like, he's exhausted leaving the mound after the top of the second. They were even talking about how frustrated and sweaty, because it's like 103 degrees. The top of the third goes so long, he has to go back out and loosen up in the bullpen.
Wow.
It was like a 45-minute top of the third. And I said then, there is zero chance I'm seeing the end of this game, so I'm not going to invest any more time.
My takeaway of where Ole Miss was having to play baseball was the area right in front of home plate before the grass gets there. It looked like some sand traps I hit out of. No, seriously.
And
I think it's by design, because the batter's box was fine, but it was really loose dirt, almost sand-like right in front.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of the Arizona batters were almost softball-like left-handers who would beat it down into that sand that was in front, and it would kill it and roll towards the third baseman. The whole series long, they were getting hits that way. It was almost designed like it was a chopped-up sand trap right in front of the plate.
And when they've got the weird – Arizona's got a weird feel, too, because they've got the – it's like they've got a big wall, but there's a painted line halfway up the wall that makes it a home run.
Yeah, above the line.
Above the line. So it's easy for it to hit the wall and bounce right back in, and everybody keeps playing, and then they got to go review to see if it's a home run. I'm like, you know, if you would just not – I don't know what they're trying to block. There's something back there they're trying to block.
Yeah.
But if you just take
probably
that
generators, your air conditioning,
I don't know what
units,
it is,
something like that.
But if you, I mean, at one point they've got Terry Francona's name on it, so they've honored him. I think he's got the field or the field house or something.
It's the batting cages,
whatever. But I'm like, I mean, if you would just knock this wall down, we would know what is or is not a home run. We wouldn't have to review so much.
Yeah.
A weird field they've got.
And by the way, a lot more seats for Arizona baseball than I think they need out there.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, that's a historically good program,
right?
But you're right. It is. It seems like they've got more than they need.
Speaking of historically good, Texas is going back 37th time to the World Series. 37th time. No other program has 25. So Texas, they, you know, anytime I start naming old school programs who are always out in the College World Series, Texas is back for the 37th time.
Augie Garrido, man, that guy could coach, couldn't he?
He could.
He had him there all the time.
But I'm not, and I understand all you travel ball people that are listening and how these all-turf fields are easy for your weekend tournaments. If it rains, you just, you know, basically sweep it off.
Don't like them.
But watching Texas, historic Texas, play on that field, and Vandy does too. And I mean, there will be a time that I watch every high school baseball and travel ball baseball and apparently college baseball. We won't play on grass anymore. The all turf, including the turf dirt, the turf mounds, everything's turf. It's just a weird look for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Vandy's got it.
Texas has it now.
Yeah, that's the most prominent one. And I know it's got to be maintenance related. Seems like they slide differently on it too, don't they?
Yeah. It's got to. Now, I can see some advantages because I think we all, even in Little League, no matter what level you played at, you would always either be pitching or hitting, and your foot would not land exactly into the hole the way somebody else's foot did. There would always be a hole in the batter's box or on the pitcher's mound, and you'd be like a little slide, or you'd have to step over the hole.
And they'd have to bring out that big thing and pound it down. Yeah.
Yeah. So this
eliminates that.
Yeah. But it's for rainouts. There's no rainouts. Yeah. When it's all turf like that.
Yeah, but I'm not a fan. I don't like it. I'm with you.
Me either. So we got baseball today. There's one more SEC team, Mississippi State.
Oh, boy.
Who could have finished off Notre Dame yesterday but did not. So it's winner take all tonight at 6 over in Starkville, where they are setting records for the number of people to go to a super regional. But Notre Dame, Mississippi State tonight at 6, winner goes to Omaha.
And they are awfully proud of that. Like, I had a Mississippi State fan walk up to me at church yesterday and said, boy, how about that 14,365? I'm like, he knew the exact number.
Yep, 385.
Whatever it was. 14,385. I was like, he wasn't even talking about winning the game, which they had done, obviously. He was just talking about the crowd.
I think they have the top 5 or 6 all-time regional attendance records.
At Duty Noble?
Yeah. Like the one Saturday night broke the one I was at with Stanford the last time we had full capacity.
Okay, this is going to be a hard question to ask. You've been to a regional there.
Yeah.
A super regional.
Super regional versus Stanford.
Right.
Last time they had super regionals. It is my only time to that field.
Okay, if you can possibly do this, if you can factor in that you're basically an eighth of a Bryant Denny, Jordan Hare, Tiger Stadium crowd, is the atmosphere comparable? Do you understand my question?
I do, I do. If you can take away the enormity of the crowds.
Right. So basically, if you multiply by six or eight, would it be the same atmosphere?
Yeah, I was out in the outfield.
Right.
So I had a good – that's where the party is, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that – it was very party atmosphere.
Were you up in those lofts that they've got, those suites?
No, no, no. Okay. I was down in the – on the fence.
Okay.
You know, section.
Right. Where the rowdies or whatever.
Yeah, where everyone's grilling and drinking and hanging on the fence and, you know, handing, you know, ribs and – pork chops and chicken legs over to the outfielder.
Right, which is really a cool tradition.
Oh, it's unbelievable. If you ever get a chance to go. I passed up this weekend because I had a speaking engagement. I couldn't go, but my friend Bob and some of the other Mississippi State folks in the area, I had an invitation to go spend the weekend in Starkville and hang out on the outfield fence.
Uh-huh.
Call in sick today and go to the deciding if necessary game tonight. And I didn't do it. I missed the greatest crowd in super regional history. But it is... what they do at Mississippi State and Ole Miss is really amazing. But, no, it's a – when you're out there, there's that same energy. I mean, if you're asking me, is there times I can't hear myself talk to somebody beside me? No.
No, but it's 14,000 people. Yeah. That's my point. If you multiply by six or eight, you probably couldn't.
Yeah. No, but it's
– yeah.
Yeah, and when State scores a big run, yeah, it gets really exciting.
Yeah, because I saw a video of the – it was made by a Mississippi State fan. In fact, I think it was one of our listeners that sent it to us. Had made it himself and sent it to us, but he's videoing them handing over trays of food to the Campbell players as they exit. They're walking along the warning track.
That's right.
And like all these Campbell baseball players, one of them's got like a foil tray of ribs. One of them's walking along eating a chicken leg, and he's carrying like a plate full of chicken. Yep. It's insane.
Yeah.
And that's apparently their tradition, right?
Yeah, they cook extra food, and there have been times that the opposing team will go out if it's like a four-team tournament,
right,
like their normal regionals, not the super regionals, or even if a pitcher is out of the game or whatever, you'll see maybe a Stanford player out in the stands. But between innings or pitching changes, they'll go to the fence and grab a quick chicken leg.
That is so cool.
Yep.
What a neat atmosphere.
Yeah, it really is. It won't be neat if they lose to Notre Dame tonight.
Well, it won't be. Yeah. Last game there either way this season. So cook everything you got, boys. Empty out the fridge.
Mississippi State, Notre Dame tonight if you want to watch it. 6 o'clock. Winner goes to Omaha. Mississippi State, one of the great programs of all time. We talk about it often here on the show. Never won a national championship.
Hard to believe.
Yeah.
I mean, you really look at Mississippi State and Arkansas, and the fact that neither one of them have ever done it is really difficult to believe.
And Florida State.
Yeah, Florida State's been that's one of the biggest puzzles of all time to me. How that guy won as many games as he won as a head coach and never won a national championship. I mean, he was in Omaha all the time.
Yep. And 12 o'clock today, Dallas Baptist in Virginia up in Columbia. Winner goes to Omaha there as well. So that's college baseball from yesterday. The SEC still fighting. A lot to get to today, including a coaching candidate for the Portland Trailblazers that is very interesting. We'll get into that coming up. It has SEC ties. And we'll update you on where the Braves are, what's going on in Major League Baseball. And, of course, a ton of college football to get to. And I'll update you on what else is going on in just a second here in our opening segment that is brought to you in part by our friends at Family Care Dental. I mean, think about your schedule on a regular basis when it comes to dental care. And you think to yourself, you know, I'm so busy during the week. I struggle to get to the dentist sometimes. It's always a pain in the you-know-what to get an appointment. Well, not with our friends at Family Care Dental. For your convenience, they have Friday and Saturday appointments available. Family Care Dental, if you need dental care or have a dental emergency and need immediate help, Family Care Dental is there for you. Their urgent care office where you can be seen the same day. Offices in Hoover, Fultondale, and Homewood, accepting all ages for emergencies or routine dental care. And as I said, Friday and Saturday appointments. Family Care Dental, 874-9605, 874-9605. I did want to touch right here in the beginning. Thank you to the University of Montevallo. They had me down to MC their Sports Hall of Fame. Now, some people were confused. They were congratulating the great Chris Stewart and myself on going into the Hall of Fame. I was just the MC.
That's right. It's the closest you'll ever get, right?
Right. Chris Stewart was going into the Hall of Fame. Great line from Chris Stewart that Montevallo is such a forgiving place that his last competitive golf outing which some of you and I didn't even know he played competitive golf at Montevallo, was a 91, was his last score, officially wearing the Montevallo golf shirt. And he goes, now I'm in the Hall of Fame. That rarely happens. He's going in as a broadcaster.
Right.
For meritorious service.
In the broadcast wing.
Yeah. In the broadcast wing. But a nice group of inductees. I knew about half of them, so I wanted to MC it. Had a chance to do that this weekend. Just a beautiful ceremony down at the University of Montevallo. It was a good time down there.
Yeah, good for Chris, man. I mean, that's a guy that obviously is a good friend of all of ours and has battled some massive health issues. I mean, we dang near lost the guy.
Yeah.
And so it's good to see him, first of all, back in good health. And secondly, his old school honoring him like that, as they should. He's had an amazing career.
And it was good to see a lot of Chris's friends and the Crimson Tide Sports Network folks and some associate ADs all came over from Tuscaloosa to support Chris as he went into the Montevallo Sports Hall of Fame. And congratulations to the entire class of 2021. Thanks for putting up with my corny, cheesy lines that I did all night long.
Did you do some awkward transitions and some weird segues?
Did you say, let me tell you about the folks here. 75 majors. 75.
I did.
I only have 10 minutes. All right.
That was
75.
That was my closing line, Rockstar. I said, I say this every day. 75 majors, 21 NCAA Division II sports with scholarships, great facilities, Montevallo.edu. The Portland Trailblazers of the National Basketball Association looking for a head coach. One of the candidates they're considering, South Carolina women's basketball legend Dawn Staley.
And it's apparently not just like a female token thing, because they are also considering Becky Hammon of the San Antonio Spurs. Now, Becky has been a bench coach for Popovich for a little bit now.
And she coached the G League.
That's right, the Summer League. Yeah, the Summer League. I think won the Summer League championship out in Vegas.
Yep.
So, you know, she's had some NBA experience, which Dawn Staley has not. It would be an interesting hire. I just remember back in the day, we used to debate the old Pat Summitt coaching a men's team.
That's right.
On the college level.
Why would Tennessee not just walk across the gym floor to the other side of the building and ask Pat Summitt to coach the men's team if she's one of the greatest coaches of all time? But I don't think my philosophy has changed over the years. I think I've always believed this, that a great coach, now I'm not talking about just good, a great coach, a legendary coach, I feel like could coach not only men or women, but could almost coach any sport. You see what I'm saying? Like, to me...
Like, you take Coach K, he could figure out football enough to coach it. Right. Nick Saban could figure out basketball enough to coach
it. It's about leading people. Like, right. Coach K, Nick Saban, Pat Summitt, Geno. I mean, you go back through the history of great coaches. I mean, you mean to tell me you don't think Vince Lombardi could roll out and coach a Major League Baseball team? It's about leading people, right? Leading players, men and women. And I think Becky or Dawn could do that if they are the best of the best. I have no doubt in my mind that Geno at UConn or Pat Summitt at Tennessee could coach men and be successful at that level. Would it be the same type of success? No, it wouldn't be, but I think they would be successful. I think they would have just as much of a chance of being successful as anyone else.
The men's game and the women's game are played differently.
They are.
Now here's what I don't know, because I've never been a coach on that level, obviously. Though they are played differently, I don't know how much differently they are coached, in that, like, obviously there are differences in the game, so you coach based on those differences. But if the only factor was roster, like if roster got changed and it became a men's team and a women's team instead of women's team, how easy is the transition? I don't know the answer to that.
Yep.
Then you have the added factor that the pro game is coached differently than the college game. So I don't know how big the leap would be for Dawn Staley to go from women's basketball to men's basketball. Those are played differently. And also go from the college game to the pro game, which is played differently. It's like there's two adjustments. My question is, how big are those adjustments? And I don't really know the answer to that, but I got to think Portland's not just going to screw this up, are they? So they obviously think she can make that. I would assume by the fact they're considering her, they think she can make those adjustments.
Well, I mean, the first thing you do, like you do with any coaching hire in the National Basketball Association, is you go to your star. You go to Damian Lillard, Dame Time, and you say, Becky Hammon, Dawn Staley. would you have a problem with them coaching you? And if he says, I would not have a problem, then that's another step forward. You would have to do that if you were hiring Ryan Brown or if you were hiring, you know, Brad Stevens. You'd have to go to your star in the NBA. That's just the way it works because since Michael Jordan, players have gotten coaches fired or hired.
Well, I think on the collegiate level, one of the issues always with a discussion like Pat Summitt or Dawn Staley going to a men's team was the element of respect. And hear me out on this. I think the concern was, you know, would they get the same level of respect from the college men's player that a men's coach would get? Now, understand this. The male coaches don't always get respect. They don't always earn the respect, right?
That's right.
It would be on Staley or, you know, Summitt to have earned that respect. Maybe they could have, maybe they couldn't have. I don't know. And I don't even know how big of a roadblock that would be because of the gender.
Well, I think that's where it starts and ends for almost every coach, right? And that's why you have to have your superstar on board.
Right. I think it would be less in the pro level, Jim, because while there is an element of respect, obviously there's a respect for a Popovich if you play for San Antonio. But it is, you'll give me this, it is a different dynamic player to coach on the pro game than the college game. They are, in a lot of ways, equals in professional sports. They aren't equals in collegiate sports. Like, in college sports, you call him Coach Williams, Coach Smith, Coach whatever. In the pro game, you play for Pop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you play for Kerr, play for Steve.
And that would be, and that's always been, you know, some people would say Nick Saban struggled from LSU to the Dolphins player relationships.
Yeah,
right?
He lost his control because now all of a sudden we're equals.
That's right.
Like, you know, I'm in a lot of ways the players are being paid much more than the coach. And in the NFL, the vast majority of time, the quarterback is more valuable to the franchise than the coach is. Now, we had a real interesting situation in New England where it was hard to determine which one was more valuable, but most of the time it's pretty easy. Like, if, in fact, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid had a fallout, Andy Reid is well-respected.
That's right.
Revered as the Kansas City coach, 10 times out of 10, they're going to side with Patrick Mahomes. He's the best player in the NFL. And if for whatever reason they had a falling out, Andy Reid's going to lose that battle. They're going to go with Patrick Mahomes. They're going to keep him happy. So you're more of a contemporary professionally, which to me, I think makes it easy for a female to make that transition, as weird as that sounds.
No, I agree. I agree 100% with you. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens. But I'm like you. For some reason, I don't think this is a token, quote-unquote, token name on a list when you see Becky Hammons or Dawn Staley. I think this is actually a real consideration. Becky has been doing it at the NBA level. She's eventually going to get her shot. And Dawn Staley's about as good as they come on the collegiate level right now. And so if you're going to look at two candidates, those are the two to look at.
Yeah, boy, it'd be fascinating to watch. I think Becky Hammon, I think she was a finalist for the Toronto job. I'm forgetting which job it was. But there was an opening that she was maybe Milwaukee, I can't remember. There was an opening she was a finalist for. So I think she's been that far down the road. She's obviously got Pop behind her. A lot of people think that when and if he retires, she'll be the San Antonio coach maybe. And that was signaled by her coaching in the summer league. It would be fascinating to watch. Look, Dawn Staley obviously knows what she's doing, right? I mean,
right.
She's the one that has taken the mantle from Pat Summitt to actually challenge and in a lot of ways pass UConn and Gino Auriemma. He's the one because, you know, going from the women's game to the men's game, there's always been that roadblock of the female coach. Well, he's the one that's interesting to me that he's never made that move. Now, he gets paid pretty well to be the UConn coach. He's been absolutely dominant, done nothing but win. He's an abrasive personality, but I've always been fascinated by the fact, and I don't know how far down the road he's ever gotten for a men's job, and maybe it's just one of those deals where he like, I like coaching the women's game, I'm going to stick with it.
Well, I mean, sometimes you find your comfort level, right? I've built this, why am I going to leave this?
Yeah, because he does nothing but win and gets paid very well to do it.
Yeah, I just love great coaching, right? Great coaching is that changes lives. And I love watching great coaches work. And I don't really think it matters sometimes what sport they're coaching. Yes, they know, you know, maybe if you're a baseball coach or a football coach, you know that sport better. But ultimately, you can surround yourself with assistants that know the other game. It's about leading your staff and then the players. I think it would work.
Like I've had, I mean, one of the issues is most of the time these players have come up playing for male coaches. And, you know, once you get to the collegiate level, you know, I've played for an AAU coach, this man, high school coach, middle school coach, whatever. They're all male coaches. And all of a sudden, it's a female. And it might not be that big of a difference, but that was always the concern. And, you know, I've had one female boss my whole life. I absolutely loved her.
That's right.
I didn't have an issue with it, right? I respected her because she earned that respect. And I've had male bosses that I didn't respect because they didn't earn the respect.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if you noticed. I don't know how much you watched. It was the Tennessee LSU. Did you watch any of that?
I watched some.
I texted our buddy Tom Hart. It was weird to me. Chris Burke is the guy that was doing color, and he sounded, to me anyway, like Jordan Rogers. And I don't know if it's just because it's Tom Hart, but it was, I mean, like if you closed your eyes, I felt like I was listening to an SEC Network football game.
Did occasionally they go down to a sideline reporter who ate something?
No, there was no Cole replacement. But I promise you that Chris Burke guy sounded like Jordan Rogers. Now, sometimes Jordan Rogers whispers.
Cole can do baseball, though.
I'm sure Cole can do baseball. Cole can do anything he wants.
Hit ball with stick, easy.
But it was the weirdest thing. And I texted Tom Hart, and he was like, well, I've never noticed that. I'll start listening now. I said, well, no, why don't you concentrate on doing your job? I don't want to disrupt you here. Because I still think they're in that goofy, he's doing it from his house thing.
Now, I was about to bring that up. I'm forgiving them. I'm giving them grace through the rest of this baseball season.
Right, but it's time to be done with that.
But when we get to football season, the remote broadcast crew from their living rooms or their sports rooms, it's got to be over with. I refuse to have sound up on any game this year. Damien, does it bother you? Is it just old people, or does it bother you that
it's a delay?
Oh, it's so bad.
It's the delay that gets me every time.
We're talking all over each other, and you have to stop. You know, go ahead, Tom. No, you, Chris.
And they don't have the same energy as they have when they're at the stadium. I mean, why you're in the living room, and that scene in Knoxville is through the roof at Lindsey Nelson. Is that right?
Lindsey Nelson, yeah.
Lindsey Nelson Stadium.
Yeah, I'm with you. This has got to end at some point. Like, I noticed Fox they were at the Cubs-Cardinals series. They were back on the road. I think it was Cubs-Cardinals they had this weekend. They're back on the road. ESPN is still Buster on the road, A-Rod, and Matt Vasgersian in studio.
Yep.
Look, man, if we got full capacity with fans, how can you justify not having the announce crew there?
Well, they're saving money at this point.
Well, there's no doubt.
They're using that to save money.
Right.
And it's hurting.
It's hurting your product.
The product, which hurts us, the viewer.
That is correct. And I'm with you. I'm forgiving.
Through baseball.
Through baseball.
Yeah. For college.
For college. Yeah, we're done with that now, really, because everything else is going to be in Omaha after today.
Yeah. And surely we'll have the broadcast crews in Omaha.
One would have to think.
I hope so. But when we get to football, you know, I don't want Tom Hart sitting in his beautiful room up in wherever he lives, Charlotte, North Carolina, calling the Ole Miss, you know, Arkansas game. He needs to be in the stadium.
Right. I mean, like, we already get that on some remote broadcast for basketball. And I think they've done some football that way, too, already. And sometimes you as the fan don't even realize it.
We do now.
But they're together there, though, Jim. That's like they're in a studio in Charlotte or Bristol together, at least. And it's not doing it from their house.
No, put them back in the stadium.
I'm with you.
The way God intended.
That's right.
724, let's do four downs. It is brought to you by our friends at Vulcan Tires.
Just like four downs, they've got four locations. You find them all at VulcanTireAndAuto.com. Listen, you don't go to Omaha on crappy tires if you're Vandy or Tennessee or hopefully Mississippi State. Don't go on crappy tires. Yep. Vulcan Tire and Automotive, four great locations throughout the Birmingham area serving you. VulcanTireAndAuto.com.
First down.
Let's start with the College World Series. Damien is in as well with four downs. Right now, two teams in Omaha from the SEC, four teams not from the SEC. Two more teams go today. Could be another SEC team. Could be two more non-SEC teams. If I said SEC or not in Omaha, Damien, you first. Who wins it all, the SEC or some other conference?
I think it's some other conference. I had my chips behind Arkansas.
Me too.
I had my chips in Arkansas.
Just you lost those chips.
Once I saw them in the SEC tournament, I was like, man, this is one of the best baseball teams in the nation. And now, nah. I think I'm going with the field.
What about you, Brownie?
I'm going to take pitching with Vanderbilt. Rocker and Leiter, and I'm going to say SEC team. Vanderbilt's pitching is the difference.
I mean, you're going to have more non-SEC teams there. Best scenario will be 5-3. Good chance is 6-2 if Notre Dame beats Mississippi State. But I'm going to ride with you. I'm going to go Vandy. I think Rocker and Leiter, and pray for rain.
and suck it down.
Baseball question as well. The Yankees, since Memorial Day, are 4-11. They've lost 7 of their last 9. They're in 4th place, the New York Yankees are, in the American League East. Right now, Brown, if I said Aaron Boone is the head coach of the New York Yankees to start next season, yes or no?
That'd be a no, a hard no. They've got time to turn this around, obviously, but what is going on with them is one of the most puzzling things I have seen in sports in quite a while. All of that talent, all of that ability, the New York Yankee pinstripes, and they have started like this. I mean, the Dodgers started worse than we thought the Dodgers were going to start. I don't know if you've looked at them lately, but they're still 39-26. Even right. though they're a game behind San Francisco, still 39-26. You look at the Yankees, 33-32, they're barely above 500.
Yep.
How was that possible 65 games into this?
Fourth place in the division behind Tampa Bay, Boston, and now Toronto.
8.5 back.
And everybody's preseason projections, Damien, was Dodgers-Yankees in the World Series.
Yeah, I think Aaron Boone's gone. And it's almost like they're damaging the brand. It's like the New York Yankees don't strike fear into anybody anymore. It's just, the Yankees are coming in town.
He got a question Aaron Boone did after the game, loss yesterday. Do you think your guys are getting content with losing? And he angrily, don't get the heck out of here. He said a different word, get the heck out of here with that crap. I think he said a different word with that, too.
Yeah.
When you start having to answer those questions,
right.
to your point, thin ice for Aaron Boone,
absolutely.
I agree.
Third down.
Hey, college football here. If I said right now you had to put your paycheck on Heisman Trophy winner, who would it be?
Spencer Rattler. I think he improved a lot there in the second half of the season for Oklahoma. And now he's going in. Lincoln Riley gets him another year. The Big 12 is the Big 12. And I think that Oklahoma is going to come out of that conference. And I think Spencer Rattler, he's a great quarterback. He really is. He's got a moxie to him. He has a little Baker in him. And, he's probably the least talented quarterback. I'm going to say the least talented quarterback that Lincoln Riley's had. But comparing him to Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, he's not in the same breath. But I do think he's probably one of the best quarterbacks in the state, in the nation at this time.
He's the betting favorite, Brown. Do you agree?
I'm going to go with I think he's the second betting favorite in DJ Uiagalelei.
Yeah.
I know that's Lance's pick as well. And here's my thought behind that. Trevor Lawrence never won one. A Heisman at Clemson. I think Uiagalelei will come in and put up Trevor Lawrence-like numbers. But he doesn't have the Trevor Lawrence mystique. So, follow my logic here. I think his numbers will be more impressive. I think he'll win it this year.
Listen, I need James and Beham Dog to get very close to the radio right now.
Oh, no.
I think JT Daniels wins the Heisman Trophy. JT Daniels.
I had a Braves fan ask me yesterday.
A Braves fan?
A Braves fan.
Yeah.
Asked me yesterday.
Not a Braves fan, as in James fan.
No, a Braves fan.
Okay.
Asked me yesterday, does Dunaway have to, sacrifice an animal to get this Braves hex off of us? He still holds you responsible, even beyond the Dodgers collapse, for what the Braves are doing right now.
I don't know if Braves fans have noticed. We traded you Charlie Morton, our second-best pitcher. We sent Blake Snell to the Padres.
Right.
And where's Tampa Bay?
Tampa Bay's in first place right now.
Not just in the American League Eastern Division. They have more wins than anybody in baseball.
And his problem is the Braves, Dunaway, are 3 games below 500, 5 games back of the Mets, and he wanted you to sacrifice an animal or something to get this hex off of them. And as I reminded him, the just normal Braves hex that lives over the Braves combined with the Dunaway hex was probably earth-shattering. Now you've done it to Georgia.
You also realize JT Daniels doesn't have his best receiver this season.
And George Pickens?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he'll be back at some point.
I
don't know.
So enough to push him some more in the Heisman.
I think you'll get Pickens mid-November. Little November rain of touchdowns.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Rockstar.
Hey, I'm going
down.
Rockstar.
Little Guns N' Roses for you.
Rockstar.
Oh, I thought you meant Guns N' Roses. Okay.
Last one here.
November rain of touchdown passes?
Win their division. No. R-E-I-G-N rain. Did I spell that right?
Yeah.
Okay, the AAC in the Mountain West. There was a talk of the AAC raiding the Mountain West at some point for expansion to get more leverage when it comes to the playoffs. And Boise State was interested in maybe joining the AAC. That looks like that's not going to happen. Brown, you answer first. If I give you the American and the Mountain West are 1 and 2, whatever order you want to put them in, who is the next best Group of Five conference? Is it Conference USA or is it the Sun Belt? We have local teams
in our state
with both of those. Is it after the American and the Mountain West, is it the Sun Belt or is it Conference USA?
Well, these things can change quickly, but right now it's the Sun Belt. The Sun Belt's the better of the two conferences over Conference USA. Now, look, UAB has been the strength of Conference USA, the consistent strength of Conference UAB since the return. But I think overall the Sun Belt has had the higher-ranked teams. I mean, you look at what Lafayette did this past season.
Coastal Carolina.
Appalachian State.
Okay. Sun Belt's the better conference.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Sun Belt champion would necessarily be Conference USA champion.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
But when you look at strength top to bottom of the conference, I think I agree with Brown. I think it's the Sun Belt.
Me too. I think when you look, like you said, Coastal Carolina, Appalachian State, you throw Troy in there a couple years ago. I just think overall – and really for the American Conference, they need to start looking at teams like in the Sun Belt. I think they should expand more towards the Sun Belt or Conference USA instead of going Mountain West. It just geographically makes more sense.
I kind of agree with D. I mean, like if you can get Boise, maybe that's a little bit different. Boise is a brand.
Yeah, the brand.
But, I mean, I don't know what else out of the Mountain West if I'm the American. I want San Jose State. I know they finished ranked this year, but how does that help me?
Let's wrap up Four Downs, and we'll continue that conversation because that's where I wanted to go to next. That is Four Downs brought to you by Vulcan Tire.
VulcanTireAndAutomotive.com for great Birmingham locations. Just like Four Downs, you do not want to go to the College World Series on crappy tires. So you, Vandy, and I'm going to go ahead and put Mississippi State in, Jim. I got them beating Notre Dame today. So Mississippi State fans, get ready. Go get your tires at Vulcan Tire and Automotive.
Now, to your point, if you're the American and you want to expand from 11, you say look towards Conference USA or the Sun Belt for those teams. If I asked you just to name me the 14 best Group of Five teams, most of them are American teams, and I think UAB's in the mix there. If you say not in the mix, they are one of the 14 best Group of Five teams. So if you were just doing a super conference, if you will, of Group of Five teams to sort of create a new conference, UAB would easily be in that. Here are the teams I wrote down.
So this is your top 14?
These are my 14 Group of Five teams, the top 14 in no particular order.
I'm going to try to do this real quick.
Okay. Appalachian State is one.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Boise State is one. BYU is one. Cincinnati, Houston, Louisiana, Marshall, Memphis, San Diego State, UCF, Navy, SMU, UAB, and Liberty, in no particular order. Those are the 14 that I think are the best Group of Five teams. And now they've got a path to the playoffs. And on any given year throughout their history, you could see those teams maybe making a run to the playoffs now. They could be the highest-ranked conference champion of a Group of Five. I think the door has opened with this 12-team expansion for one of those teams, Damian, to possibly get in there.
Yeah,
or two of them.
I'm thinking of, like, Liberty, UAB, those two really stand out. BYU as well. BYU's consistent.
Did you put Navy in and didn't put Army in?
I put Navy in. I did not put Army in.
Interesting. Why would you not put Army in? Or 9-3 last year.
Navy actually was the last one I put in.
And I think Army, because we've seen them lose to Navy for so long, yeah. I mean, it was just one of those things. I guess you would say recency bias.
I mean, well, last year it was definitely
Last year was different. Yeah, last year was different, definitely.
But Navy-Army, I mean, I love that game.
Mm-hmm.
I do think they're a little behind these other teams that I threw out there. I don't think Navy or Army's consistently better than Appalachian State, Louisiana, Cincinnati, and some of those teams.
You did not throw a single MAC team in unless I missed one.
I did not.
Why do you hate the MAC?
The MAC has fallen way off.
They had two ranked teams last year.
Who are they?
Well, I mean, they're Ball State and Buffalo, where they were ranked. Buffalo's a pretty good program right now.
They run the damn ball, I'll tell you
they
that.
They do. That's right. They do not that. Mind running the football.
Short-lived. I don't think it's any sustained success. I don't like the Mac anymore. Mac's way, way over.
I decided on Tuesday.
That's right. I am done with the Mac.
So it's either the Bachelorette or Mac.
We're not that far removed from Western Michigan being in a New Year's Six bowl.
We're not. We're not.
And obviously, their coach left and went to Minnesota. So, I mean, they were 4-2 last year. I'm just looking at their record.
Maybe I'm wrong on the MAC. I'd love to hear Ed Jock's roundtable if you think the MAC deserves more respect than I just gave them.
And I think, if I am not mistaken, the only Mountain West team you put in was Boise?
San Diego State.
San Diego State?
Yep.
Do you think any of the MAC schools could beat any of these 14 that he just named?
Buffalo could. Absolutely.
I think it would be a stretch.
On a consistent basis?
I mean, this Buffalo team this year could. Whoever the best MAC team is, whoever is the best MAC team could beat a lot of these teams, absolutely. I mean, Houston's not – Houston, they weren't world beaters this year. Yeah, I mean, I think they're consistently
best MAC team against the Conference USA champion UAB.
That's a good game. Well, it's a good game, though. I mean, it's not a slam dunk UAB wins that
game. I would take the Sun Belt champion, and I would take the American champion.
You would this year because Lafayette was so good.
But Appalachian State's good. Coastal Carolina.
I agree. Did Lafayette win it? I forget. I know it was a weird game, weird ending to the game.
Or did Coastal win it?
I do forget, honestly. Yeah. I forget who won that conference championship game.
I'm just saying that I agree with you guys. If the American does ever expand, they don't need to break up the map and go all the way out to the Mountain West. And Boise joining, I would understand why Appalachian State would, I mean, why the American would do that because of Boise's history. But to me, Appalachian State is right there. I would even go James Madison out of the FCS and bring that school up before I would go and bring in San Diego State and some of the other Mountain West.
Well, I tell you who I tap my brakes on that you included, and I don't have a problem with you including them right now, was Liberty.
Yeah. Navy was the last one. Liberty was the next to last one to put in.
I mean, I don't know if they've just hit gold with Hugh Freeze, a guy they in any other situation would not have been able to hire. But they happen to fall into that hire, and when he leaves, I just don't know that they can sustain the success.
Yeah, and with the change at the top of the school in leadership, with Falwell moving on, if the funding will be there like it has been.
That's right, because Falwell basically wanted to try to make them the Baptist Notre Dame.
100%. That phrasing. Yes.
Right, and I don't know that the next administration is going to have that type of commitment behind Hugh Freeze. Once he's done that type of commitment in football, if they do now, they got a chance. But I just don't know if after Hugh Freeze they can hold on to this. Do you want me to now blow your mind with an NFL number?
You can try.
The Eagles have signed, according to our buddy Phil Yates, ESPN, former 49ers, Spain Park, and Southern Miss quarterback Nick Mullins.
Interesting.
Yeah, good that the Eagles have signed him. Good for Mullins. As Phil Yates points out, in his first 16 starts, so basically a first full season of starts, Nick Mullins threw for 4,405 passing yards. In his first 16 starts.
He did not.
That's what Phil Yates says.
Phil is lying to us.
There is one quarterback in NFL history to throw for more in his first 16 starts. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's pretty crazy, isn't it?
Well, there are a lot of people, not just Nick Mullins' friends and family, who have said, I'd like to see him get a chance to start somewhere else. It's obviously not going to happen at San Francisco for it to just be his team.
Well, Philadelphia is an interesting spot, though.
And if you go to Philadelphia, there is a scenario you could paint that Nick Mullins has a chance to be that team's quarterback at some point.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy, though, to think in his first 16 starts, only Patrick Mahomes threw for more yards in NFL history.
I can't be the only person that does not believe that stat to be true, because we watched enough Nick Mullins games when he was in there for the injury there in San Francisco, where it did not seem like they were able to move the offense.
I just wonder how many games it took him to get those 16 starts, though, you know?
How many years?
Yeah, I mean, just how many consecutive games were played, because, well, you know what? He started, it took a good many, because he started 8 in 2018 and 8 in 2020. So it basically chopped it up over three full seasons.
That cannot be a real stat, though.
Well, I'm looking at it right here. He's thrown for 4,714 yards in his career from Pro Football Reference, which is a great stat site. I don't know why you doubt them.
So 16 starts, almost 5,000 yards.
Uh-huh. In 16 starts, he's appeared in three games that he didn't start. So some of the numbers I gave you are non-starts. But Field has done the math on his actual starts.
Mm.
It's crazy, though, what he's done.
I don't believe it.
I don't know. You don't believe it. I just gave you his career yardage, 4,714 yards. He's only appeared in three games he didn't start. He started exactly 16 games.
Okay, after we talk to Brett here, who's on the road we always call him Brett from New Mexico. But after we talk to him, I'm going to ask you a question on what puts you in a good mood if you're an Alabama fan, if you're an Auburn fan, if you're a Georgia fan. And I'll play a Sean McVay of Rams coach soundbite to sort of set the table of what we're doing. But be thinking about what puts you in a good mood about your favorite college football team after we talk to Brett, who's next with us. Hey, Brett, how are you?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, Brett.
I'm up here with the Cheeseheads today, headed down to the Windy City. So today's Flag Day, so I wanted to give you guys and some the listeners some flag etiquette, and also want to talk to you about a conversation I had with your buddy Marty Smith over the weekend.
Oh, okay.
All right.
So,
flag etiquette. Okay. Okay. I did not know flag it was Flag etiquette. Day, so thank you for the heads up.
Yeah, today is Flag Day.
Now, did you serve in the military, Brad?
Yes, I did. I was a military police officer for 10 years.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. All right, so first of all, you never want to let the flag touch the ground.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I learned that one as a kid.
Do you, in fact, have to burn it if it touches the ground? Is that the protocol?
More or less, that's the protocol. Number two, if you're going to display your flag 24/7, 365, it needs to be illuminated.
Okay. I like that, too.
Okay. And if you're not going to illuminate it, then at roughly around 5 o'clock in the evening, you need to retire your flag, which means lowering it off your flagpole or taking it off your flag stand that's on your front porch on on your front porch post or whatever.
All right.
Third, if your flag is getting faded or tattered, contact your local American Legion. Tell them what size flag you have, and they will swap it out, and they will discard the flag for you at a proper time and place. They usually do them every 6 months, depending on how many flags they have. They actually take care of destroying them in the proper way.
They burn them, though, don't they?
Yeah, they cut them up and they burn them.
Yep. Yep.
And then lastly, if you're displaying your flag in a horizontal fashion, like a banner, the blue field needs to be top left as you're looking at the flag from, like, the audience's looking at the stage.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, also, right. Am I wrong about this? It is customary that no flag fly above the American flag. So if you're flying multiple flags, none go higher than the American flag.
Why would you beat Brett
correct.
To his punch?
Well, he said last one, so I was just going to add this.
Okay.
Well, I had forgot about that one, but you're correct, Ryan, that if you have a display of flags, the American flag is the highest one.
Right.
And
okay.
If you display them on a pole on a stage, it is to the speaker's right, the audience's left.
Ooh.
Okay.
Man.
Okay. So I'm listening to – do you guys watch Marty McGee on Saturday morning?
Oh, absolutely. But one more thing on the flag. Are you are you okay with it being a bandana sometimes around a great American's head or – In the back pocket of a rock singer, or draped over a goalie after he beats the Russians.
I'm good with that. They make bandanas designed like the American flag for that specific purpose. So right. I don't have a problem with that.
So when Jim Craig had it skating around the rink in Lake Placid, you're okay with that, right?
Loved it.
He'd just take it down the Russians. Come on, man, the Ruskies.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So when Bruce Jenner grabs it in 1976 and runs around the track with it, that's good, right?
That's good. Any positive display of your patriotism is always good.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. So, Jim, were you watching the show Marty McGee Saturday?
I saw some of it. I saw them talk to Ed Orgeron, and I saw them talk to Jamie Chadwell.
I called him and talked to him after Jamie was on, because Marty had made a reference of being covering the PGA at Kyle Island and had tweeted something about Gold Bond, and like 2 days later at the hotel he was not staying at, a big box of nut dust showed up.
Yep.
And he gave it to his boss. So I had to call him and I had to tell him I gave you guys an LT and nut dust a shameless plug, and I was like, dude, it's a game changer. And I had to tell them it's official nut dust, not just nut dust. Otherwise, if you Google the wrong one, you're not going to like it. And he just laughed his butt. He said, "Are you serious?" I said, "Dude, I've got two bottles in my truck. I've got one at home, and I'm fixing to order some more."
Fantastic. Hilarious. I love like it. That. I yes. love it.
So, anyway, thank you guys. Love the show, and we'll holler at y'all later.
All right. All right. Safe travels on the road. One of the great American truckers out there moving product around on Flag Day.
Heading to the Windy City, he said.
Yeah, from Wisconsin.
Yep.
If I got his
that is correct.
State trivia correct. 9/11. Okay, here's Sean McVay. Why he's always in a good mood these days. Listen.
I think I've been very happy. Everybody says, man, you just seem like you're in a better mood this offseason. I said, you're damn right I am. So this guy, he's a special guy. I think one of the best ways that I could describe him, when you hear people that have been around him, there's a known confidence where when he walks into a room, you always feel his presence, but he's got a great humility about himself that everybody loves being around him.
All right, before we start.
He's talking about Matt Stafford there.
I don't know why, but the start of that soundbite sounded like it was one of the comedy club commercials where they splice in the guy doing his stand-up routine.
I think I've been very happy. Everybody says, man,
why is that? Why does it sound that way?
I guess because it's the specific mic they use. Yeah. It's a live mic.
Yeah, maybe so.
I think coming home soon, Sean McVay and his hilarious one-liners.
I think I've been very happy lately.
Everybody says, man, you just seem like you're
why are you so happy? Well, I'll tell you why I'm happy.
Yeah, my wife's out of town.
All right. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hijack it, but he just sounded like a stand-up comedian.
So he's been in a good mood lately. If I asked you, why should Alabama fans be in a good mood? Why should Auburn fans be in a good mood? Why should Texas A&M fans be in a good mood? Let's start in College Station. Why should Texas A&M fans be in a good mood going into this season?
This is overly broad, but look, I mean, I think everybody says I'm excited about quarterback when you got a new quarterback, right?
Right.
Even though Kellen Mond, historically, is one of the best quarterbacks in Texas A&M history.
But there were some people that got tired of Kellen Mond being their quarterback.
Well, it felt like, I mean, Kellen Mond, his numbers are going to be in the pantheon of SEC history forever. I mean, his numbers are tremendous, but what did you get out of those numbers? It didn't feel like you got a ton out of it, right?
That's right.
So they're going to be excited at quarterback and the newness of that. I think, and this is overly broad, but the thing that would excite me the most if I am a Texas A&M fan is I feel like we finally took that step forward last year. A one-loss season and an all-SEC schedule and missed the playoffs by, you know, a fairly thin margin. I feel like we finally took that step forward in the Jimbo Fisher era. Now, what that demands is another step forward. But I think that's why I would be optimistic, is we finally showed some life in the SEC West. We were second to Alabama, yeah, and Alabama beat us pretty good on the field, but we get them coming to our place. They're not going to beat us forever, and we took a step forward. So I think the optimism in College Station is that step forward.
And, boy, do they have some playmakers at running back slash players. They've got Isaiah Spiller back. Nia Smith is back. And who's the kid that really came on in the bowl game? Is Devashane or something like that?
Yes.
I mean, and he plays inside, outside. Yep. So much skill, talent back. But great tight end still.
I think you're excited, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to be excited other than the quarterback position.
Hey, I don't blame Texas A&M fans for being excited. I think, you know, for them, this can look, it all comes down to the Alabama game in terms of the West. But you look at your schedule this year, you get Alabama coming to your place. Your out of conference is not a backbreaker at all. At Colorado's your toughest out of conference game. You know, your other team out of the two teams out of the East aren't backbreakers. You get South Carolina and Missouri, only obviously one of those on the road at Missouri. So you get about as favorable an East schedule as you can get. You get the toughest team in the West at home. I mean, it's a great setup for Texas A&M this year. I would be very excited if I'm them.
Why am I happy if I'm in Ole Miss, if I'm the guy in charge in Oxford, Lane Kiffin? And I'm going to go one before you get to an obvious one at quarterback. They have some really talented JUCO guys coming in that they really think are going to beat out starters they have back on defense. That some of their JUCO guys are going to be the reason their defense is better. And that would make me happy if I'm Lane Kiffin, if I'm seeing actual defensive improvement.
Well, I think realistically, if I'm an Ole Miss fan, I think my defense can't get worse than it was last year. And I think my offense, while I lose a really talented receiver, one of the best I've ever had, in Elijah Moore, I've also got back one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And a what is considered to be an offensive genius as my head coach. So I'm very excited knowing that my defense cannot possibly be worse. It's got to be better, Jim. I feel like if I'm an Ole Miss fan, 8 or 9 wins is attainable. We're taking a step in the right direction. We were 5-5 last year against a conference schedule, an all-conference schedule. I think I can get to 8 or 9 wins. I think I'm a program headed in the right direction.
I look at Athlon Magazine, who I have in front of me here. First-team defense, second-team defense, third-team defense, all SEC. Not one Ole Miss.
Well, they don't deserve to be. Not I don't know if you watched them last year. They were awful. But again, that's my point. They cannot be worse. It absolutely – now, how much will it improve? Will it improve enough for them to get to the 8 or 9 wins? I don't know, but it's got to improve.
Okay. At Jock's Roundtable, if you'll tell us why you think your team feels like Sean McVay. Everything's coming up rosy. Everything is sunny. Part of our show today being brought to you by the great folks at Train. Unstoppable players always on Monday. Part of our Train. We named Chris Paul earlier.
37 points in a playoff game. It's got to be.
It's pretty good there. Mississippi State hopes they have some unstoppable bats tonight in Starkville.
Yeah, your Train Unstoppable player presented by Train. Don't let the Alabama heat get you down. Keep your home comfortable with an affordable Train cooling system. Train is the official cooling partner of Jocks. In 2021 is the 7th consecutive year it was recognized as America's most trusted HVAC brand. Find a comfort specialist near you at Train.com. It's proven it's hard to stop a Train. Congratulations, Chris Paul, your Train unstoppable player.
Well, you start looking at these preseason magazines, and you see Arkansas riddled all over first, second, and third team, offense and defense.
Yeah.
That Arkansas team will be very interesting this
upcoming
year.
Could be sneaky good.
I've been waiting on this. I hope he's heard us defend Notre Dame through this new playoff format discussion. Golden Domer joins us next at 9:17. Hey, Golden Domer, how are you, sir?
Top of the morning, gentlemen. How are y'all doing?
Doing great.
Is that it?
Yeah, that was a good call.
You hear me?
Oh, yeah. We got you.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up? What's good, guys? Hey, look, as far as the Notre Dame playoff, I heard y'all's conversation with Paul. First of all, I'm not a big fan of it because I don't really agree with putting so much value into a conference championship. But as far as Notre Dame and how it plays out for them, I think once again Notre Dame kind of pulled one over on a lot of the people that are thinking that they got the shaft here, and this works out perfectly for them. I mean, they get the value of a home game on their campus. They'll get the lowest seed in the first round of the playoff. And they get to keep their independence, which, you know, is a win-win for Notre Dame. That's their mission. And
you get the best of both worlds. You get a bye. By the way, your schedule works. You get a bye and a home game. Nobody else gets that. You know, some teams will get a bye and they'll end up in a bowl game if they keep that system. Some teams don't get a bye and they get a home game. You're getting both if you're Notre Dame and you're a 5-8 seed in this playoff.
Yeah, and see, Notre Dame, what a lot of people still have a hard time figuring out is Notre Dame does not put their schedule together or – when they're talking about playoffs, as the easiest road to the national championship. Their overall mission is to create the most interesting, and they want to bring good games into the Notre Dame Stadium, because if they were just trying to make their schedule easier, they could do that now, because they are the only ones that pick their games. And so for the people saying, yeah, but you don't get a first-round bye, the way Notre Dame looks at that is, yes, but we get an own game, a game on our campus. That spreads our, you know, we're going to be on those eyeballs of that first-round playoff every single time we deserve to be there. So this is a win-win for Notre Dame.
I always like playing devil's advocate with you, though. But if you are the 5 seed, and not necessarily you're going to get that every time, you make it sound like you are, but if you are the 5 seed, then that 12 seed often is that hot, up-and-coming group of 5 team that is going to be at the 12 seed. Some years, like 2017 UCF, you know, that's not a guaranteed win for just about anybody in the country, I don't think. That's a tough game.
Yeah, but see, as a Notre Dame fan, we think differently than a lot of SEC fans. We don't look at it as, is this going to be an easy game? We look at it as, is this going to be a compelling game? Is this going to be an entertaining game? Is this going to be a game where we get to play a quality opponent? And that's a win for us. A lot of people look at it as, we want the easiest road to the national championship because that's the end-all, be-all. As a Notre Dame fan, that's not the end-all, be-all. And I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, because you hadn't had one since 1988. But, you know, y'all brought up schedules, and Paul is so off base with Notre Dame when not with our scheduling. You know, I forget that Notre Dame's on NBC. You know, I have to turn over there. Notre Dame, I think, it was either 2019, had four of the top 10 highest rated games of the season. I mean, 40% of the highest rated games was Notre Dame.
What this year was that, 1991?
No, it was 2019, but one of them was at Georgia. Yeah. I was trying to remember the other ones.
But if Notre Dame, year in and year out, if you were, and I give Damien a project if he's willing to do this. Over the last 10 years, if you were to get Notre Dame's schedule and compare it to Notre Dame or to Alabama and Clemson, the two golden children of college football right now, and you compare our worst games in the regular season to their worst games, and you compare our best games to their best games, Notre Dame blows them out of the water, guys. As far as an overall schedule, Notre Dame's format works the best because they're independent.
Worst games, yes, there's no doubt. Best games, you're kidding yourself because some of the best games are going to be conference games and you don't have those.
I'm not saying that our best games would blow Alabama's best games.
Well, that's what you just said. Our best games would blow them out and our worst games would not be as bad. You did say that.
Well, for instance, Notre Dame's worst game this year is Toledo.
Yeah. Which is a good team, yeah.
I mean, Toledo's not a good team, not a great. But I mean, if that's your worst game,
but you're right, the Mercers and those kind of games,
they don't show up.
Don't belong in the schedule. Don't belong in the schedule.
Even the best games, we got games against Clemson. We got two or three against Clemson the last 10 years. We got games against Georgia. I mean, we've got games against top five Michigan. I mean, it's all over the place. I mean, it's to say that if people would just wake up and stop hating on Notre Dame, and just say like maybe what they're doing works better. Well, I've said it for years and years. That if Alabama was actually, I mean, y'all are on top of the world right now. If y'all had been independent the last 10 years, you would have taken your revenue and your footprint and the Alabama legacy would have been 5 or 6 notches up because you would not have had to play the same teams year in and year out. It would have just been the way that Notre Dame does it is the way to do it.
What are Alabama's three best games, Jim, just off the top of your head?
This year?
Yeah, this year.
It'll be
Texas A&M.
Yeah, Texas A&M will be number one.
I guess Miami.
Miami will be third.
There. Well, second.
Florida. It'll probably be the SEC championship.
Well, let's don't do that. Let's do Florida, Texas A&M, Miami.
Florida's good as well.
Or LSU, whatever. Notre Dame's three best are probably Wisconsin, Cincinnati. They're four best. Wisconsin, Cincinnati, Southern Cal, and North Carolina. Whichever three you want to pick from that.
Okay. Well. There's a good chance Florida and Texas A&M are higher ranked than all of those.
Probably so. It's not a horrible group of games, though, by any stretch of the imagination.
When you get to the bottom,
yeah.
If you're cutting off the last bottom piece of the pie.
Toledo's better than anything Alabama or Auburn will play at the bottom.
Yeah, exactly.
Sports Illustrated did something Rockstar is going to love. They ask, which of these blue bloods bounces back the best?
Good. The blue bloods are like North Carolina.
I think they're a touch generous in their blue blood definition.
Is this football blue blood?
This is football blue bloods. They give us six of them asking which ones bounce back the best.
Right.
I'm not going to get into the argument of is this or is this not a blue blood.
Can I be Lance? Texas. I bet there's Michigan on there. I bet.
You've gotten two so far.
Penn State.
You've gotten three so far.
Do not say anything until I've finished. USC's on there. USC's going to be on there.
No, they didn't bounce back. USC was on there.
Why don't you let Brown walk us through this, Lance?
UCLA.
I mean, Rockstar.
Hold on. Done with UCLA.
They've got Auburn on there at 6-5. I don't know that Auburn honestly has a ton of bounce back room at 6-5. Like, I think a really good season by Brian Harsin would be an 8-win season. And that's never going to be considered a bounce back by an Auburn fan. It's going to be considered a first season, we're going to forgive some miscues, let you recruit your guys and get in there.
Well, I think 8 wins would be huge this year.
I do too. I think 7 is probably a likelihood you would never consider that a bounce back. So I honestly, of this group of teams, I don't know that Auburn has a ton of realistic bounce back room. They've got Texas at 7-3. I'll cover these two because they've replaced coaches. Texas at 7-3. I don't know, Jim. I know you're very high on Sark,
but he'll get 7-3 is the equivalent of 8-4. He'll be better than that.
I want to look at their schedule real quick before I agree 100% with you. I need to remember who they got. They've got that. It's I don't know if it's a tough, tricky, or interesting how I describe their start, but Louisiana. And then at Arkansas.
Well, I know it's hard to say Texas will beat Louisiana after they lost to Maryland those 2 years back-to-back.
And as good as Louisiana looked this last year.
But I think Texas beats Louisiana.
You think they're 2-0 in those two games, don't you? I kind of do,
against,
too.
Against Louisiana and Arkansas?
And at Arkansas, yeah.
Arkansas is trickier, but I think they're 2-0 in those games.
Yeah. They probably drop a Big 12 game or two. So if they can get past those two, yeah, definitely a bounce back.
Yeah, but I could see them 9-3, 10-2.
Okay, so that would be a bounce back from 7-3. So those two teams changed coaches. These teams did not change coaches, so let's hit these. Penn State was 4-5 last year.
Yeah.
In Happy Valley. When you look
technically should have been 5-4. That first review we got that decided the game was the wrong review. They reviewed it and it was the wrong call.
Dunaway.
Kid did not get in the end zone.
They're Michael Penix.
Yeah.
They're open as I mean, I'm not going to say it's make or break for their season, but boy, their season could get headed the wrong way in the first three games. They're at Wisconsin, really tough opening game, Saturday, September 4th.
Is it Saturday or Friday night?
I've got it listed as a Saturday. For some reason, I thought it was a Friday night too, but I've got it as the big noon kick on Fox.
Okay.
Ball State, they'll win, but then they, you know, they host Auburn for that prime ABC game, a game they'll be favored to win, but they're going to beat Ball State. You could see, I mean, they've got an opportunity for a couple games to go the wrong way on them early in the season.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that.
But you get those two wins, on the other hand, then you're definitely a bounce-back team from a 4-5.
Yeah, but we also expect Wisconsin to bounce back this year.
Well, they're the next one that's mentioned. Okay. Wisconsin was at 4-3 last year. Sports Illustrated mentions them on the bounce-back. You want to talk tough starts? You want to talk tough starts, Dunaway? You talk Wisconsin. They open at Camp Randall against Penn State. They then get a breather against Eastern Michigan. Then after a bye week, they play Notre Dame and Soldier Field and host Michigan. The good news is they get a lot of those games at home or a neutral site. But, boy, when you play Penn State, Notre Dame, and Michigan in three of your first four games, that's tough.
I like that. Notre Dame and Wisconsin haven't played, I believe, since 64. I'd say the winner of the Penn State-Wisconsin game has a chance to bounce back by the scenario and the parameters we're using.
Boy, well, I mean,
I don't know how many if those first four games. I don't know what Wisconsin's record will be coming out of that.
And I'm not going to pretend
I like Notre Dame better than Wisconsin.
Yeah,
I sort of like Michigan better than Wisconsin this year. I sort of like Penn State better than Wisconsin this year. They could be 1-3.
How about after that? They're at Illinois. You know who they get in their? Let's see, it's week 7 in their sixth game. Army comes to Camp Randall.
Tough team to play.
I'm not going to pretend like I know everything Army's got coming back, but I do know Army runs the triple option.
Well, while you bring that up, that's one thing we've got to get out of the vernacular this year because everybody's got everybody back.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
It's when you don't have everybody back is when we should talk about you. Like everybody's got everybody back because of the COVID year. It's when you don't have everybody back, that's when it's a news story.
Boy, a fascinating start to Wisconsin's schedule. In their first six games, Penn State, Notre Dame, Michigan, and Army. There are some losable games in that stretch.
Playoff contender if they survive all those.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, because once they get to their back half, it is much, much more manageable. Wisconsin at 4-3. So Texas, Wisconsin, Penn State, Auburn, Michigan at 2-4. This is a team we're talking about right now is a tough game for Wisconsin. But when you look at Michigan, 2-4 does not cut it. You look at their schedule, a pretty manageable schedule for Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. You just wonder when he's going to turn the corner, Dunaway. That was such a weird team last year. So impressive in that first game they played on the Big Ten schedule against Minnesota and turned right around and lose to Michigan State.
I don't know what to make of Michigan, which puts them in this story on whether or not they will come back or not. But again, here's Jim Harbaugh, who seems to be coming down on the wrong side of history in this bow off the field story in Ann Arbor, where he has made a very firm line in the sand of defending Bo, his coach.
Mm-hmm.
And there are former players who are saying, you weren't there, you don't know what happened. And I know that the players who play today don't necessarily get caught up into that, but I think your coach can be worn down by some of the stuff that is going away. And if Jim Harbaugh, I think, just worried about coaching his team and all instead of all the other stuff that goes around Jim Harbaugh's life, they would be better off. I have a feeling that this is his last year. By his choosing, they'll never fire him.
Could be.
I have a feeling he opts out.
I tell you, when I look at Michigan, I think they're going to start 4-0, but I think the next 2 weeks after that will decide where their season goes. They open with Western Michigan, who they should beat. They get Washington, who's it's not a layup, but they're hosting that game, Jim. I think they should beat Washington. They host Northern Illinois, and they host Rutgers for homecoming. So they should be 4-0 with that schedule. But then you're at Wisconsin and at Nebraska. And I think those two games probably, that's right before your bye week. You know, you've still got Michigan State, Ohio State, and Penn State on the back half of your schedule. I think that determines those two games right there kind of determine the direction of your season. Are you a bounce-back team, or are you still a 2-4-ish type team?
I mean, I can still see them 9-3, but with another loss to Ohio State, doesn't do a lot for me.
And your final
LSU
Sports Illustrated bounce-back team, you got it, Lance, is LSU.
Okay, good.
The Tigers are a fascinating football team. We know who will not be their quarterback. It will not be T.J. Finley, but we don't know if it'll be Brennan or Johnson. They've got a ton of talent. They were a 5-5 team last year when they got in a bad quarterback spot. You can't discount how much the injury of Miles Brennan led them to 5-5. Their defense was atrocious.
8-4 or better for LSU, and I think they're better.
Listen, Florida, Texas A&M, and Alabama on that schedule, obviously. And all those teams are going to be top 10, top 15 teams. Maybe not when they play them, but in preseason. That UCLA game is prime time Fox, Saturday, September 4th. I think that's one of the most fascinating week one games. Because I think UCLA is getting a little bit better. And just to see, I could see LSU coming out and looking spectacular in that game. Basically, the exact opposite of what they did against Mississippi State last year.
So Fox's schedule week one is the big noon kickoff is Penn State, Wisconsin, and primetime they've got LSU, UCLA.
They do. That's a pretty good, good day for Fox, isn't it?
Clap Monkey goes to Penn State, Wisconsin, you would assume, and out in LA.
Good question.
You'll have
normally they put him on their big noon, so this would probably be Joe Davis and Brock Heward.
Yeah. Yep.
With LSU and UCLA, and I don't know who they have between. That's a pretty good day on Fox, though.
Yep, that really is.
Yeah, but I could see LSU. Like, my gut tells me LSU comes out in that game and looks like, not the 2019 LSU team, but looks like a well-oiled machine. Yeah, like a really good LSU team.
Much more normal LSU team.
Yeah, and then they probably don't – I'm not saying they played at that level all year, but I think in that UCLA game out in the Rose Bowl that night, they'll be one of our – my prediction is when we do our show on Labor Day, one of our storylines beyond Alabama and Auburn's first game is, boy, LSU looked good at UCLA. And I think now again, I don't know that they're going to play that way the whole season, but my gut tells me that's going to be one of the talking points coming out of week one.
Oh, how about Tim Brando's middle game will be Louisiana at Texas?
Boy, they got a good day on Fox.
Yep.
Good for Fox 6, man. You got three straight good games there.
Yeah, how about that? That'll be good. The great Tim Brando on that game, most likely.
So they open with Penn State, Wisconsin for the big noon. Then we get Louisiana and Texas. And then the nightcaps, LSU and UCLA.
Even on FS1, not a bad set of games. You have Stanford at Kansas State in Arlington.
It's a weird game.
And then you have Oregon State at Purdue, not a bad game. And late night, you have Nevada at California, not a bad game.
No. But, boy, that Fox, that's a pretty good lineup for week one on Fox.
Yeah.